Hi folks, and thanks for listening to this Tortoise Shack podcast. Couple of quick things before we kick off. We are live on Sunday the 28th of January in the Sugar Club for Podcast for Palestine with an incredible lineup of special guests, some very special guests, live music and plenty of entertainment. All proceeds are going to Gaza, so get your tickets now on eventbrite.ie. The link is at the top of the podcast you're listening to right now. It'll be a great night for a great cause, and I hope to see lots and lots and lots of you there. And I also need to remind you that the Tortoise Shack is completely reliant on you. We've no ads, we've no sponsors. The only way we keep the show on the road and can continue to have the type of conversations that you're about to listen to right now is if some of you chip in, pay it forward, and keep it free for everyone. And the easiest way to do that is patreon.com/tortoiseshack. So if you can go without the price of a fancy cup of coffee once a month, give it to us. Help us keep the show on the road in 2024. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the support. Thanks for liking, sharing. Please come on board, and I hope to see lots of you next Sunday evening.
Hello and welcome to Moose Cult. My name is Niamh McRae, and this is the first episode of series 2 of the Moose Cult podcast, which I co-host with my friend Rosie Mead. And today we're just going to chat to Tony Groves, our producer, to give you a little bit of an update about what's going to come in series 2.
Great to see you guys. How is everybody? It's been a while, but I was explaining to Rosie when I was talking to her earlier that this your podcast, season one, and folks, if you haven't listened to season one, go back and have a listen to it. I think of it as like a library book, because every day someone seems to take it down off the shelf and thumb through and find a piece that they want. Even before we came on air, I just had a quick look and it was actually Untangling Identity. So two people have had a look at that so far today. So, you know.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I find that as that's what probably, you know, when you guys had the concept of it, was the idea that having, well, there's a lot of these academic tomes that can sit on shelves, or they may not, and this might be more accessible. And I think that has actually happened. But like for new listeners, maybe do you want to give them an idea of what the concept was and what season two will be like?
Yeah, sure. So the concept, Tony, is fairly straightforward. As you hinted at there, we know that there's loads of really good academic work happening. And we wanted just to provide a platform for writers and scholars and, you know, researchers asking critical, challenging questions about Ireland. And as you hinted at there, the last series, we looked at everything from stuff on biodiversity to identity and capitalism to living well with the dead. So we'd like to bring that to use the format of the podcast to bring work and critical work in Irish society to new audiences, really. And in an accessible format, as you said, and bring new audiences to people's work. Yeah. That's really the kind of basic summary.
And you really struck upon it in the first, and even as you mentioned the topics you covered in the last one, I'm struck by some of the ones where things I had no clue about, but when I'm sitting down to edit this 2-hour podcast, I'm learning by osmosis. I have no choice. Rosie, take my dig out of it. How did you feel? How did you feel the reaction went? And were you happy with the first series? What did you think publicly? How did you go down the road and someone say to you, I heard that thing that you did the other day?
I actually had an experience of being at a funeral and somebody coming up to me and saying, well, there's an hour and a half of my life I'm never getting back again. And I had to kind of dig into what that meant. And it was actually the interview that I had done with Padraig Fogarty. And that was a very West Cork way of complimenting me on that interview, actually, and saying how great they thought it was. I think we were really blown away by the response, actually, because, I mean, for example, in relation to the Padraig Fogarty interview, not only did people listen to it, you know, that I hadn't seen or heard or connected for quite a while, but they actually went out and bought the book. And I thought that was really great that there was this kind of like, you know, that the podcast had helped people to go back to a book that had actually been out for 5 years at that stage. So I think that when Niamh and I started, we didn't have a massive sense about the, like, we don't really know for sure, like, how many people listen. But we did feel that there would be people who would be interested in, and, you know, maybe initially we thought about maybe students or people in academia and, you know, but as time has gone on, actually, I've found that people from all kind of different walks of life just because the topic kind of grabs their attention, or they're just hungry for something a bit different that they've tuned in and listened and got something out of it. Right. So that's been really exciting for me, actually, is that kind of response and reaction.
Neve, did you find that as well? You're nodding your head.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So my hairdresser listens to it, and he shared it with his sister who lives in England, and I think anyone who likes kind of in-depth kind of slow interviews, you know, they can get their teeth into it. They're the kind of people that enjoyed it, really. Do you know?
More than that, though, can I say to both of you, it's because you're into it. And when you're into it, that helps the listener go on that journey. And you could feel that in those interviews. And you mentioned the Padraig Fogarty one, who we've interviewed myself. What's interesting about this is we do a thing on the Tortoise Shack's website where we get pingbacks. So if Padraig appears on something else and they're doing footnotes, they'd often refer back to, guess what? The podcast you guys did with him as the one that people, is the one we mentioned on our show. Maybe go back and listen to this one first. And we get those pingbacks, and it always strikes me, you know, it's like footnotes. It's like those little you in the world of academia. They're all compliments, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you said that it was you know, you love doing it, but these weren't small things, because you might have to read or research, or you might have to go and look into a lot more goes into it than, say, me reacting to what just happened on the floor of the Dáil. And that's a lot more time consuming. Did you find it a struggle then to fit it around when you're trying to do yourself, Neve? Because, you know.
Yeah, it probably was a bit like you know, because we want to do justice to people's work for starters. So we're going to read obviously the book or the papers, and we're going to read around it. And so it can be tricky to do that around the day job. And then, you know, I always go, oh, I'll get it done over the summer, because you think you'll have time over the summer and then you don't. But that being said, it definitely focuses you to do it. And also, I think it reinforces, or it underlines kind of the value of a podcast, because, you know, academics are always complaining they don't have time to read, and this all can give you the you know, a flavor of those ideas without reading the book. Or, as Rosie said earlier, it can kind of lead you to read that book. Do you know what I mean? So I think it probably, even though it can be tricky to find the time to do it, it's worth it. And also that shows kind of, I think, the value of podcasts. You know what I mean? Because I certainly listen to loads of podcasts with people talking about their ideas around books that I wouldn't necessarily have had the time to read, you know?
Yeah, and then you find, look, I'm sitting here, I can put my hand now on four books right in front of me that are probably all because of certain situations. Someone asked me the other day, said, oh, my friend has written a book, can we send it to you? I said, if anybody sends me another book, I'm going to, I'm joining the far right and finding out what's this summer's must burn book. but it is fantastic, because I do appreciate what you're saying about the medium, because you can peel it back there, and you can actually have a little bit of a little bit more nuance in it, and then this is, again, Rosie, don't get offended. But often, just to let you behind the curtain, folks. Often when I'd be turning around to pull down a podcast from when it's recorded, and I sit down and I say, right, I'm gonna put this together, and I go in. So it's maybe I schedule it, and I schedule say it's 1 o'clock tomorrow, and I schedule it 1 o'clock tomorrow. I might sit down at 10 to 2 and say, right, I might grab that out of the cloud now, and it says still recording. Rosie, they do tend to be, you know, they're I think we did discuss the fact that, you know, maybe do, you know, oh, you get the odd one done in 45 minutes. That's not happening, and that's not what this podcast series is about. Sure, it's not.
No, I mean, this might come across like I'm trying to make a virtue out of bad behavior or necessity, but I think actually doing the podcast, and originally we had an idea that, oh, to be a good podcast, it has to come in under 45 minutes, and, you know, it has to be snappy and snazzy and all of that kind of stuff. And I think that my experience is that when I've been reading the work and I've been engaging with people's ideas, I've actually felt even more strongly, even this time, that we need to give people space to talk about their ideas properly, because so much of the culture around us is orientated towards the quick, fast kind of hot take, towards kind of like put it all on one page, you know, don't bog me down with kind of serious stuff. And when you read these books, you see that, you know, people have put so much of their time and scholarship and energy into it. A lot of academics don't even, when they go to conferences, only get a chance to talk maybe for like 20 minutes about what they've written. So there's actually very few opportunities to go into depth and to detail about what they've done. So I think as I've been doing it, and I am the number one offender for length.
Anive, you're not much better now. Don't you start laughing.
I know this, you know, like, and yeah, we have hit the two hour mark. But what I would say is I think every single element in those interviews is important towards building up a full picture of what's motivated the writer, you know, what their perspective involves, why their ideas matter. I think this is what we're trying to draw out. And if it is difficult, if it is demanding, well, tough in a way, you know, because that's what we're trying to say is these, you know, that going through material and ideas slowly, carefully, thinking systematically through them, this matters. And that podcast can be a vehicle for this. And maybe that, or just to maybe like that, if the interviews are long, well, then maybe we can pause, have a cup of tea, take a little break and come back to it and also revisit them backwards and forwards over time as well. So I hope that doesn't sound defensive. I'm being really defensive.
I'm thinking like say especially like living with the dead as in contemporary Ireland as a concept. I mean, absolutely, you're going to have to sit and take your time over how you're going to discuss that. You're not going to come in and say, hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves and bish, bash, bosh. That's just not what, you know, so I absolutely get that. I just think people should understand that. Isn't it better to invest those 90 minutes, say, in those conversations rather than, because there are podcasts out there that some of people are listening to that are the same amount of time and they're talking about ivermectin instead of COVID vaccines or sort of stuff. So, yeah. You know, and this is why it's important that yeah, no, absolutely, don't mind me, I'm just giving you a bit of a dig.
No, and you're right, Tony, because actually you've given us a really good opportunity to talk about it, because I think that, you know, like when I mean for example, like Gavin, the interview I've done with Gavin Titley is nearly 2 hours, and that's about free speech. But like, think of all of the stuff that you hear about free speech and how shallow and how limited and how uninformed and how bad faith so much of it is. And so somebody like Gavin, you know, just talking through the concept so systematically really does make us think about, okay, next time I hear that kind of abuse of the concept of free speech, I'm going to maybe act and think in a different kind of way about it. So I think it's very useful.
And Niamh, just to you, like, it when you hear that and the concept of it, as you say, I know you guys kind of felt that maybe this would work in that medium. Are you more convinced now, even going into season two, that this is actually, yeah, it's a natural home for those conversations?
I think so, yeah. Yeah. And I think also there is flexibility. Like, I mean, you can, when I listen to very long, you know, let's say that I was listening to a really long one on the dig, or, you know, I break it up if I need to. Do you know what I mean? So there's that as well. And I also think it's an alternative, like, I, for example, the one of the interviews for this series, I've already shared it with my students, the recording. Mm. Now it was shorter because I don't think they listened to a 2 hour one, to be fair. But I think in terms of your question around the format, I think it was just really nice just to use that as an example to be able to go, okay, here, lads, well, here's actually an audio, you know, okay, I want you to do the reading as well. Yeah. but this is actually just a more conversational tone around that particular topic. So here's the author's paper, but here she is just talking about it in a little bit, you know, more conversational way. So that was just lovely to be able to, now not all of them listened to it, but some of them did.
Isn't that great though, you know, where you get that, the like, because that will appeal to someone who might struggle with
reading, yeah.
They access it, it's different, and it's, you know, yeah, as I said, yeah. I've just alluded to it. I was telling Rosie, I'd downloaded Arundhati Roy's most recent book and I had to go buy it because I kept hitting pause saying I need to make a note of that. I need the physical book to make the note, but I didn't mind listening through. And then again, I'm a bit weird. I can listen to things at double speed and double at 2.5 speed because I've gotten so used to it. Like, I was listening to a podcast. This is telling on myself now. I was listening to a podcast the other day, and one of the hosts had said something that had in a bigger pot, much, much bigger than anything I do. And he had said something that had upset me. So I screenshot it to send it to him to say that that it upset me. And his reply was, goes, "You're a madman." I said, "What do you mean?" He goes, "You're listening to me at 3.5 times speed." And I said, "Well, if I ever listen to you talking normally, I think you sound a bit drunk." So, I do it like that now. So I'm outing myself now. There you go, ladies. Look,
I'm going to just jump in there a sec. And it's just like something that's well, and it's probably worth saying that, I suppose, because we're saying that they're long, and because they're like, you know, like very often people in academia, that I hope that doesn't put anybody off kind of like experimenting with listening and kind of tuning in, because I think they are very conversational in their tone. And I think it is about opening up stuff rather than closing it off. You know, like sometimes, like, you know, academia can be off-putting for people, and it can be. They can experience it as discriminatory and oppressive. And it's really not meant to be like that. It's meant to be quite the opposite, actually, of showing that the ideas that people are talking about have like real relevance in terms of people's life and are accessible and can be made accessible.
And you've done that, both of you. And there's a compliment I'll pay you, that you've both done that. And what can be, to my ear, different is maybe the first couple of minutes, because you're discussing someone's background and someone's issues. Whereas, you know, I might be telling someone's story. You're discussing their pathway to where they wrote this piece that is interesting you. But once you understand that this is the same as me telling someone about how, you know, this is this activist story, it's the same thing in its own concept. And then you put that aside. So I think that's, it's an important point. Guys, what you've already given a bit of spoiler on season two. And what else is coming up?
I've two coming up, and there might be some more, but we're not sure yet. We might need to pin those down. So the first one, and this is the one that I mentioned that I shared with my colleagues, I did an interview with Majella Mulkeen, who's a lecturer over in Atlantic Technological University. And she's written a really interesting paper on social care. Okay, so some listeners mightn't be familiar with the social care context, but she's done some really interesting research on questioning where is the care in social care. So social care is a profession that's concerned with working with vulnerable groups like children in residential care and so forth. And it's a newly regulated profession. So she's really questioning kind of some of the character that regulation. So it's regulated now by an official government kind of registration board. And she's questioning some of the character that regulation is taking. And she's asking some really, really fundamental questions around, well, where is the care in social care? And she draws on lots of feminist ethics of care theory. And it's like, I think it's a really fabulous, her work is just fabulous and very, like what you were saying, that really practically important in terms of questioning about how we are actually training people to work in this field. So that's the first one that I have coming up. And then another one is with very different again, which is, again, the beauty of this format. Professor Kath Brown, who is a geographer, and she's in UCD. She's a professor of geography, social and cultural geography in UCD. And she has done loads of work around exploring, I suppose, the those who are opposed to legislation, equalities legislation, gender and sexualities equality legislation. And so her and her colleague have coined this term heteroactivism. So she's just gone into and to really unpack some of the nuances of what it is and how they oppose these, you know, gay marriage and LGBT rights and so forth. But what we're specifically focusing on in this podcast is one of her current projects, which is called Beyond Opposition. And she's having conversations with both people who obviously are in favor of gender and sexualities equality, but also people who are opposed. And she's interested in looking at what she's finding is that it's a very diverse group. And but what's also interesting is she's hoping this research can help us maybe move beyond some of the social polarization that we're experiencing. So I'm dying to get stuck into her to talk about what she's found, but also, I suppose, some of the kind of methodological and ethical implications of doing that kind of research? Like, what's it like to work with people who are opposed to some of the things that you're, you know what I mean, have been actively in favor of? So that's going to come up coming up in a
that's
couple of weeks.
Brilliant, because honestly, there's so much of the there's I don't have the and here's a plug for non-Tortoise Shack podcast. I listen to Conspirituality quite often, dipping in and out. And one of the problems you find in that is that idea where, and again, even the hosts are guilty of it to a degree, where they're so well informed that they kind of can move beyond the people who need to be reached out to. But there's often great people who you think, well, actually, was it peer to peer that helped people out? Was it these conversations? Was it, you know, how do we do this? Because we always say the far right have a playbook. Well, where's our one? And that can get me. Rosie, you've already touched on your conversation with Gavin, but just give us one more. I don't want to give away too much more, and we'll leave it up to the rest.
Okay, well, the first one that's going to be released is by Emma Dolan, and Emma Dolan is based in the University of Limerick, and Emma is looking at the politics of apology. And in case people don't know what I mean by that, she's really referring to the situations where governments and the state have to apologise for some kind of historical wrong. And Emma has done research on that from a kind of very much feminist perspective and looking at the kind of gender dimensions of it. But she's also maybe looking at maybe kind of weighing up the kind of value for activists of apologies and the extent which perhaps they may kind of create further problems or they may promote certain kinds of inequality. She's done a kind of original research by looking at the apologies that were given to by the Japanese government to the Korean comfort women, and also those notorious images from Abu Ghraib prison when the US military police abused prisoners during the occupation of Iraq. So I suppose what Emma's really doing is like saying there's this kind of idea that we're living in an age of apology, and she's really keen to kind of look at that and understand what that means, but also that apologies aren't kind of neutral and that they have effects that are kind of unpredictable, but also they tend to be very heavily gendered as well. So we're going to be digging deep into the kind of very concept and the practice of apology.
Yeah, well, I think I spoke to someone the other evening when we were having this bit of a row, and I said, well, we are probably only a little bit more than a decade and a half away from some Taoiseach having to apologise for some of the things that have happened, say, in direct provision or in other areas. So we have to be very mindful of that. So I think that's fascinating stuff. Listen, if you could achieve anything now in terms of season two, or maybe taking learnings from season one into season two, what would be it? And that's my final question for you both.
I think it would be just to have like a sense that people are listening and tuning in and kind of having a greater sense of that, but also that maybe people are dipping backwards and forwards between the different conversations, so that even though we're in series two now, that maybe people are going back to series one. But I'd also really like if people would engage with the books and the articles as well, that, I mean, you know, like that it's that we aren't the last word on what these people have to say. And that they're, you know, to kind of follow them up and to kind of pursue the ideas. And that would be really, really valuable for me, that in some sense that we were able to give back something to the people who have very generously given their time to participate in these interviews, that there might be some kind of positive payback for them in terms of like interests and citations and student engagement and wider engagement with their work.
Niamh.
Yeah, no, that really covers it, really. It'd be great to hear some feedback. Yeah. Yeah. If people think that we're, you know, that they're useful, that they're, you know, that they're engaging, I think that's kind of it, really. I mean, I think probably this series were probably quicker to get stuck into the questions rather than loads of academic preamble, you know.
That's because you've a little bit of experience behind you now.
Yeah, absolutely.
If I could, I'd burn my first 200 podcasts from the internet forever. Like, you know, I'd go full Carthage and just salt it, but I can't, because you can't kill the internet. Not yet, anyway. But
And
trust me, you guys didn't make half the mistakes that I did. I'm really looking forward to it, and I don't want to say on a personal level, it's been great, because you've been so kind to me in terms of your patience, knowing that, you know, we're trying to I'm I'm spinning plates and I drop them from time to time. And Rosie and Niamh, you've always been very kind to me in terms of that. So it's a pleasure to have you on board, and I'm really looking forward to season two. And I hope lots of people go back and listen to season one.
And I just want to say then, Tony, that we would have been lost without you. And I don't know why you're even saying thanks to us, because I mean, it's completely the other way around, to be honest, that you've been incredibly indulgent and supportive of us. So just to say thank you for that.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Not at all. That we will, the mutual appreciation will be kept to a minimum here. Listen, I think everybody needs to check this out. It'll be out everywhere, but do go back in the meantime. This is just your teaser, but when you're getting the teaser, go back and check out season one, because it's all just below this and you can have a look through. There's definitely something there that'll pique your interest. And if you're not, you're just not feeling it, folks. You have to get on board. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Tony.
Thank you.
No worries. Listen, we leave it there. When we talk, we'll talk to you on about every week for the next few weeks at least. And we don't know exactly how long this is going to go, but we hope we'll drag it out as far as we can. Talk to you soon. Bye bye.
Take care. Bye bye bye.